I'm going to say, holla.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. The Oregon legislature has ended its 2021 session. We'll talk about bills passed to hold police accountable and to reform Oregon's criminal legal system. My guest is Juan Chavez, attorney with Oregon Justice Resource Center's Civil Rights Project. Welcome, Juan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Juan, first talk about your work with Oregon Justice Resource Center.
Sure. So OJRC has a number of projects that touch on basically all of the aspects of mass incarceration as it's built in Oregon. And we're trying to fill in the gaps where there are that aren't addressed by either the criminal legal system or the civil legal system. So what that means in practice is, at least here, the Civil Rights Project is we sue prisons and police departments for deficiencies. We do also engage in advocacy and education best we can, but we're really trying to leverage the courts best we can to achieve a more equitable Oregon.
As I just said, the Oregon legislature just ended, and there were some disappointments. Bills that did not pass were compassionate release for prisoners with medical conditions, the right to vote for prisoners while in prison, that did not pass, and also reforming Measure 11, Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing law, that did not pass. So what did you work on, Juan, at the Oregon Justice Resource Center? What legislation did you work on during this session?
Well, we have an excellent policy director, Zach Winston, who did touch on the bills that you mentioned. I also assisted best I could in any cases that kind of touch on the civil legal system. So whether that's the compensation for the wrongfully incarcerated, for bills that were meant to work around qualified immunity, which is a scourge upon our civil rights, and on various police accountability bills. But on the ones you mentioned, I had some hand in them, but Zach primarily worked on them. And it's a great disappointment, I think, to all of us, though, that none of those bills had as much leverage as maybe even some of the police bills. And what that says to us, of course, is that there are still two Oregons, and there is a different one for folks who are incarcerated. We can talk a lot about our obligations as a progressive state to provide for folks, but if we're not doing it for the least among us, for people who really have had their liberty taken from them, who have no opportunity to protect themselves, you know, I don't know if we really have earned that mantle.
So let's get into some of the bills that did pass. So Senate Bill 620 passed, making Oregon the second state in the nation to eliminate fees for post-prison supervision, probation, and parole. And also a bill passed that expanded earned leave for Oregonians on supervision. So Juan, can you talk about what exactly is post-prison supervision or parole, and why these bills are important?
Sure. I think a lot of people think that part of doing your time just means sitting in prison, when in fact it actually has a multitude of downstream effects that you're still tied to, whether legally or just culturally. And I think on the legal side, post-prison supervision is a bear for folks trying to just get reestablished in society. If you're having to pay these fees for your supervision, or have other kind of requirements on you when you get out, it becomes all the more harder. I know that folks, you know, think it's on the individual to sort out their life after they got out of prison, but fundamentally what makes for less recidivism, what makes for more healthy, verdant lives and fewer people constantly getting hurt in the process is supporting people who get out. So eliminating those kind of fees is very important, and also providing more opportunities for folks to earn earlier release. I think when we got to this pandemic, there's a lot of hope that we would rethink our mass internment of human beings project, and unfortunately the kind of earned credit portion of that got swept aside, and our hope is that this bill will ensure that ODOC is going to have better reasons to sweep those aside before acting on stuff. So, you know, people need opportunities. They need something to work towards. Just letting them sit in prison doesn't serve anybody.
Mm-hmm. And they did their time, as you said, Juan. They did their time in prison, and they come out and they continue to do time under parole, sometimes, you know, 3, 5, 10 years. And there's so many fines and fees attached to that. And it's another ball and chain around their neck as they try to reenter and be successful in society.
Absolutely.
Another bill that was passed that I was excited about is expungement. And that removes barriers, automatic expunction for certain juvenile records. Talk about that. Why is that important to our youth who serve time and now are again lassoed with this record that follows them throughout their life?
Right. Like I was saying, there's legal barriers to people moving on, and then there's also cultural ones. And part of the cultural barriers is the onus that we put on people who have records. We both never forgive and never forget. I think that is the focus of our punishment system in America. And it doesn't serve anybody's interest, and we need to allow people to move on with their lives. And providing them no opportunity to do so will only ensure that they're going to be further marginalized, and marginalization leads to potential recidivism or to other people being harmed. So it's imperative that people have the opportunity to just easily get an expungement and get on with their lives. Currently, expungement requires several years of waiting for the opportunity to be expunged. You have to sometimes hire a lawyer. You can go to a clinic of some sort. That does require time and engagement with a process that still, after you start it, takes quite a bit of time. And people need housing, they need jobs, they need to get loans. And it's all the, any delay in people being able to do that is a delay in them beginning to move on with their lives.
Juan, you said you worked on the police reform bills, and there were many this session. So some of them, reporting on use of force, duty to intervene, officers must report, officers who witness misconduct of their fellow officers, and a ban on military surplus equipment for the police. Talk about your work and all these great bills that passed the Oregon legislature this year.
Sure. I think it would shock a lot of people to know that we don't have a good way of knowing what's going on with our police departments across the state. I think while there is so much more work to be done on this front at a base level, we need to understand what's going on the streets. We need objective measures that vindicate, I think, what the public has been experiencing, which is unaccountable police harming the community and not serving their best interests. So when you're passing bills like, you know, duty to intervene, that really is actually already their obligation in some manners, but it does require usually a civil lawyer getting involved and having to drag the municipality kicking and screaming to accountability. This cuts to the chase. It tells them this was always your obligation, and you better now know that you're on notice that this is your obligation. So that's an immense step forward. And, you know, we might see something interesting come out of that in the sense that maybe use of force will go down now that other folks now have an obligation to intervene and to report on that. There's studies on this kind of idea of the bad apple. You know, I think a lot of folks just want to cut out the idea that we can hold on to these police departments. It's really just this one guy who went rogue, went Dirty Harry on a subject. When in fact, not unlike a contagion, misconduct spreads. As soon as there's a sense of impunity, as soon as there's a idea that I can do this, nobody's gonna tattle on me, and the blue wall's gonna hold, then I can keep going on with this. And other people learn from those officers, and it spreads. And so this is hopefully an opportunity to allow good officers to continue to be good officers and police their own. I am of the opinion that there is no good version of policing. I am of the opinion that there is no good prison, but that's a society that we need to build. And that's not where we are now. And so these bills are helpful to build that society.
What are some of the other bills for police accountability that were passed?
Sure. So I think during the protest season, what we were seeing in at least Portland was police officers arresting folks for low-level crimes that they knew the district attorney wasn't going to be prosecuting, because these are traditionally crimes that really are more correctly articulated as contempt of cop. So let's think of interference with a police officer or resisting arrest. Basically, crimes that are ones where the officer felt hurt emotionally, perhaps, and didn't feel listened to. And so the threshold for determining what's interference with a police officer has changed. It's no longer not listening to a lawful order, which is a murky standard unto itself, but it's now really like, you know, there's an officer here who's investigating a crime and you jumped in front of them and tackled them. You know, it's something actually, interference now has more of a meaning. So that's important. And also officers who, or police departments who arrest people now don't have the instant ability to post mugshots. That kind of goes to our other, that mugshot bill actually, I think has only gotten to the, through the legislature. I'm not sure if the governor has signed it yet. But the idea is that police departments have been using trial by press release and really just trying to show these mugshots like mounted heads of elk. Like, look at all these people we bagged. Whether or not they're actually charged was irrelevant to them. They just wanted to have trophies. So there's another bill that passed that hopefully puts a stop to that. And there are other bills where more comprehensive database building of use of force and of other kind of misconduct, I think, are still in the works. And there's still hope that some of those can reach a full vote from both houses. There's still work to be done, clearly.
And what was your overall impression? Do you feel that without the murder of George Floyd and the worldwide protests and what continues here in the city of Portland, do you think our legislature would have acted on these police accountability bills?
You know, I think there's something true about Oregon specifically, and it's everybody is just, they have no greater fear than being labeled racist, you know? And I think that strangely is kind of an interesting driving force to instill these changes, this kind of personal feeling that I don't want to be the racist one. You know, we can't be like those people. When I think we're kind of misinterpreting what racism is, which is this kind of pervasive white supremacist system that we have built and have maintained and people benefit from. I think there's such thing as negligent racism. So this is a prelude to me saying that I do hope that many legislators would have acted on these bills, you know, had not Mr. Floyd been tragically murdered. But it's clear that there wasn't pressure on them, and it took a nationwide movement to say, no, if you don't do anything, you're racist. And it seemed to have done the trick. That said, we didn't do enough. I think that's abundantly clear. And it's telling again to me that the things that we didn't work on speak to people who have already been chewed up by the system, our neighbors who are in prison. The fact that we didn't act on that shows that we still have so much to learn about systemic racism and white supremacy.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. My guest is Juan Chavez with Oregon Justice Resource Center, and we're discussing the 2021 Oregon legislative session and bills passed for police accountability and to reform Oregon's criminal legal system. There were a number of bills for police training. One training bill that passed is the airway training, which requires officers to be trained on airway and circulatory anatomy to avoid seriously injuring or killing someone while trying to restrain them.
Well, it seems that the circulatory training is aimed at how Mr. Floyd was murdered. I mean, I think we should be banning chokeholds and other kinds of use of force restraints or carte blanche, but maybe that's one way of attacking the problem. But
oh, and there was another bill that passed, was the munition regulation.
Yeah. So, you know, that bill, I think, kind of had a bit of a tortured history, unfortunately, because there is a time where we were adamant that we're going to ban tear gas. And I think that would have been the far more fruitful, clear way of attacking this problem of the fact that police departments are dousing entire communities in chemical agents that we don't know enough about. I don't want to sound like a crank here or anything. It's just fundamentally, tear gas has not been studied in the quantities that police departments in America uses them. The most recent study was in the late 80s, and that was on that was done by the Army, and they greatly scaled back how it is that they train with tear gas because of it. No such regulation exists for American police departments. Internationally, there are regulations on how much tear gas can be used. And so I think this bill does clarify for departments that don't have rules on how to use tear gas. But what we've seen in Portland, unfortunately, is that they're ready to launch these things at hair trigger, and people are still being affected by it.
Another bill that passed was unlawful assembly. Do you have any news on that one?
So previously, and I think as most Portlanders would know, going out in the streets is whenever the police feel like people can't be out anymore, regardless of whether or not there's unlawful activity, they just call it an unlawful assembly and start sweeping people away. The lack of clarity on what it is that announcing that something's an unlawful assembly, I think, was a problem. And this bill does seem to attach it finally to the fact that, you know, just because you announce something's an unlawful assembly doesn't mean that you can then carte blanche attack anybody who's in the crowd. There has to actually be a person who has committed some unlawful act, and that person can be arrested or detained, not the crowd. And that wasn't clear, I think, from the original bill.
And another bill that goes along with that is interference with a peace officer.
Right. And that's another, you know, kind of a joke of a crime, because what you saw for so long is people were having one or two crimes that they were being prosecuted with, either resisting arrest or interference with a police officer. It doesn't tell you anything about, you know, what actually was happening in the streets. It doesn't tell you if this person, you know, actually committed some sort of act that wasn't just, I was protesting. So these were clearly charges only being used to spoke speech. And that's unlawful in a lot of ways, but because it's wrapped up in a statutory crime, police officers still got away with it. So this bill does attack, I think, one of the common reached for excuses to stifle speech. And it does so by really kind of, again, honing in on what interference means. You know, interference should be something that's more important. If an officer is looking at a crime scene, for instance, and you drive your car in and do wheelies in the middle of it, that's probably interference. That makes more sense than what it is that officers were using it as.
Lots of changes, especially for the Portland Police Department. Who's going to hold them accountable? Are they going to take it upon themselves to hold themselves accountable? What is the future of policing here in Oregon? What do these changes mean?
Well, you know, I hope that hope springs eternal that they will see the light, and I feel like I use that phrase a lot, that they'll see the light and police their own. I frankly do know that there are officers who don't agree with those tactics and who are involved in the investigations of bad officers. We saw that recently with Officer Budworth, who was just indicted on assault. I am hopeful that this is seen as an opportunity for police to rethink what it is that their public charge is, what I would interpret how it is they go about their business as a broad category, broad swath, is maintaining order. Order doesn't mean equity. It doesn't mean progress. It doesn't mean anything other than holding the status quo, which is racist, white supremacist, and classist, in check. And so while we can get some technical fixes, you know, that is still the overall project that needs to be addressed, and some of this legislation gets that process going.
Now, Juan, let's go back to one of the largest bills for criminal legal reform, House Bill 2002, which was brought forth by Partnership for Safety and Justice and a coalition of Oregon organizations. Now, House Bill 2002 did include reforming Measure 11, Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing law. The bill did fail, but some of the policy and funding proposals of House Bill 2002 did pass the Oregon legislature. We already discussed some of them, such as eliminating post-prison supervision fees. That came out of House Bill 2002. And last year, Portland metro area voted in favor of Measure 110, which decriminalized small amounts of drugs. And the legislature voted to fund and strengthen Measure 110. And some of the funding proposals that came out of House Bill 2002 were funding for public safety programs, such as there was a restorative justice grant, a reimagined safety fund that will develop community safety alternatives, that was funded. The Transforming Justice Initiative was funded, and that invests in communities of color to help reshape Oregon's public safety system. So a lot of good things happened as a result of House Bill 2002.
Fundamentally, I think if we're ever going to move our culture away from mass incarceration, we're going to have to invest in ourselves. And there's different ways that we can do that. We can be prospective. We can build the future that we want, investing in smarter justice initiatives, in investing in communities, and in giving them housing, healthcare, those kind of things. But we also need to, I think, look a little backwards and look at who it is that we've harmed in the past and make sure that they have support. I see some of the other things that got funded are medical wards in McLaren, for instance. And being a restorative justice community requires taking care of the people that we've harmed, just as a community and a culture. And so those are the kind of smart investments that we need to make. It's unfortunate that given the opportunity to get rid of an arcane scheme of mandatory minimum punishment is terrible. I think we have been talking about it for so long. So many people have been harmed by this process. And yet we've given ourselves the largest mass movement for Black lives, for racial justice, for criminal legal reform, and we still couldn't pull it off. It still speaks to, I think, misconceptions about what mandatory minimum punishment achieves and what it would mean to move away from it. Fundamentally, lengths of sentences do not correlate with safety for the community. What does correlate is services, investing in ourselves. So that piece, I'm grateful, is still being worked on, but there are some things that we still need to look back into what we've done and ameliorate that.
Wow, there was so much on criminal legal reform in the Oregon legislative session this year.
Right. You know, I'll say that I met with legislators, primarily folks from the BIPOC caucus, and they're incredible people. They work so hard on these issues. And there are many colleagues that they have, white colleagues who also put in so much work, were champions of these bills, and were really pulling for the BIPOC community and being allies. It'll take more though. I think that's abundantly clear. It takes more than a few allies. It takes the entire BANG culture to really see the sea change here, and to be bold. Again, we have a mantle, a self-professed belief that we are a progressive society here in Oregon.
Are there any heroes in the legislature who stand out for you, Juan, who are on our side for police accountability, criminal legal reform?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to have missed Representative Bynum this season. I'm immensely grateful to her for having spearheaded and brought together advocates who I think are normally shunned by the legislative policymaking process. And so I'm grateful to her for really tapping a younger, vibrant crowd to come in and advocate for these bills. There's new legislators like Representative Pham and Representative Graybar and Representative Campos, who I've worked with, and Representative Dexter, I've had great conversations with. Representative Wilde. Yeah, I'm a fan of a lot of folks. And on the Senate side, and I didn't work as much on the Senate bills, but I'm a constituent of Senator Frederick, and I've always respected him, as well as Senator Manning, who spoke so incredibly and forcefully on a lot of these issues. Senator Dembro has been a great advocate, I think, for folks in prison.
Senator Prozansky.
Prozansky he's a champion for these justice issues. I think he's a very savvy legislator as well. I haven't worked as directly with him, but happy to do so if he's listening.
And you mentioned the new BIPOC caucus also that was very supportive of a lot of this legislation.
Absolutely. Being crucial to a lot of the progress we've seen in this legislative process. And, the Speaker of the Oregon House, Speaker Kotek, I also admire as well. There are so many issues that we could be tackling, and I wish everybody shared all of my interests, but I'll work with who we have to work with, and that's across the aisle. I know there are many justice committed folks in the Republican caucus who also could be allies and champions on these issues, and we're happy to work with anybody who's willing to think different about this stuff.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your work and the work of Oregon Justice Resource Center. My guest has been Juan Chavez, attorney with the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Thank you so much, Juan.
Thank you.
You have been listening to...
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in to